Ramchal is speaking now about how one can acquire Hasidus. He began by saying that it requires, first of all, a meditation and an awareness which will stimulate a reaction and a response. If we only were to be aware how infinitely benevolent Hashem is toward us, we would have a sense of appreciation and gratitude that would lead us to a response of wishing to do the will of Hashem. In order to achieve this awareness and this realization, it requires that a person should isolate himself for a period of time. The yikbites kol ma'adoyus v'nosei, and let him gather his knowledge and his understanding, ela histaklus v'aloiim b'dvorom amitim ela, to be able to think and analyze these concepts. So it's not going to be acquired, it's not going to float in automatically. We're going to have to make an effort to reach these concepts. And he says these efforts have to be made by profound thought, with isolating yourself for meditation. He can get a great deal of help with learning, thinking about the chapters in Tillim, and not only saying Tillim, and not only saying the words and even understanding the meaning of the words, but also studying Tillim. There are dozens of works on Tillim. Perushim, not so sure that they're in the hundreds, but there may be. So that simply saying Tillim is not going to do the job completely, although it's a good start, but one should study Tillim in order to learn. As David HaMelech said, from the you see in his chapter of Bochei Nafshi, how from a awareness of nature he comes to Bochei Nafshi as Hashem, to an awareness that his soul should praise Hashem. And Perek Kuf Dalet is simply a most beautiful description of natural wonders and how David HaMelech appreciated Hashem from that, and that's only one perek. Because inasmuch as Tillim is full with the love of Hashem, the reverence of Hashem, and all varieties of chassidus, of saintliness, if a person will take the time to think about what Tillim is saying, to study them properly, then he certainly will be stimulated to follow in the footpaths, to follow in the footpaths that David HaMelech had designed for us. And it's also important to get some additional stimulus to Hasidus from studying the lives of Tzaddikim. Because it is obvious that these can stimulate a person to wish to emulate them. We've already said that the Torah has told us halachas of utmost importance that are symbolized by a very delicate nuance in a pasuk. And yet when Eliezer tells Bisuel how he came to choose Rivka, He relates over the entire parsha how he talked with Avram and what happened and what he did and etc. And the Torah spends many psukim, which it doesn't do for halachas that are even the halachas of capital crime, life and death issues. So the Gemara says this is because when you hear an eved of Avram talking, you better listen. Because Yofes Yichosen Shalavdi Ovis Mitarosen Shalbonim. What Eliezer has to talk about is a reflection of what he saw by Avram. And he describes the life of Avram. And when he'll tell you a little bit about how Avram acts, he says that's more important than sitting down and learning for hours. Because, you know, I once thought about this. If a person wants to learn how to do something properly, let's say a person wants to learn how to play golf properly, is he going to get more out of sitting and studying books or by watching the pros do it? And clearly, a technical knowledge of sitting and reading a book, right, is not going to be anywhere near as effective as if a person can watch how the pros do it and emulate them, right, and copy them. And this is why the lives of tzaddikim are so important. These were not theoretical concepts, but actually how they lived. And if we can have a good description of what tzaddikim did, we have a model after which to fashion our lives. And we have in each generation, we don't have to go all the way back to Avraham Avinu, we have in each generation people who can serve as models for us. And those things that have been perpetuated for us and have been recorded in history about the lives of tzaddikim in various generations, there is especially among Hasidim, the concept of Sipur Tzaddikim occupied a very major place in Hasidus, because it was from, even more than learning the Sifur Hasidus, it was realizing how tzaddikim lived that can have an influence on a person's behavior. So he says this is extremely important, he says, to learn about how Hasidim, how tzaddikim lived, and to be able to emulate them. That is the way to acquire Hasidus. Ach mafsid Hasidus. Now he wants to tell you what's going to stand in the way of a person developing this trait of saintliness or piety. Hatrodos v'hadogos, the worries and the stresses that occupy a person. Because if you let them get to you, if the mind is going to be occupied with worries and with other dealings, then he will not have the time to devote to the kind of depth of thought and realization and awareness that Chassidus will require. Umibli his boinenus, if he doesn't put the time in to think of it and to meditate, lo yasiga Chassidus, then he will not reach it. Furthermore, even if he has reached some stage of Chassidus, then if he doesn't put enough time in to think, then he's going to lose it. The worries and the stresses that a person have will deter the seichel, and confuse it. And is not permitted to reinforce himself and to increase his love of Hashem and his reverence of Hashem. And all the other items that are relevant of Chassidus. That's why the Chacham have said, talks about when the presence of the Shekhinah can be expected. He said you cannot expect to have a divine presence if a person is depressed, dejected, totally preoccupied with his own needs, with his own thoughts, and cannot devote the necessary time to think about the kinds of things that he says are conducive to Chassidus. And certainly, if a person spends time thinking about indulgences and pursuing earthly and physical pleasures, this is certainly going to deter him from Chassidus, because these are the polar opposite of Chassidus. Chassidus is geared toward living with the bare minimum of what is necessary to sustain life, and to devote the majority of one's energies toward Avodas Hashem, and to the degree that one occupies oneself with what is more than necessary, more than the bare necessities, and goes after pleasures and is diverting his energies toward physical pleasures rather than toward spiritual things, this is, that's going to deter him from Chassidus. Ki he mefatim alev, they seduce a person, limoshach achareim, to be attracted toward them. V'sol mekol inyonei haprishus v'adi amitis, and this is going to distract the person from, separate himself from the physical pleasures, and will deter him from coming to a knowledge of truth. Then how does a person avoid these kinds of things that are interferences with Chassidus? He says the key to that is hu habitochen, that is the trust in Hashem. V'hu sheyashlich yovei al Hashem legamra, for a person to put his entire trust, casting his lot with Hashem. V'asha yeda, because if a person knows ki vadai yesha sheyechsel odom ashenikzav loy, that a person will not lose that which was predetermined for him. As the Chachamim say, kol mezonoisav shel odom k'tzuvim l'meros Hashanah, that a person's parnosa is predetermined from Rosh Hashanah. And ein adam negei v'amuchal chavera afilu k'mo nimna, a person is not going to be able to take away from someone else even as much as a hair's worth as from what was predestined for him. If a person can develop that attitude, then he will and have a staunch belief in that, then he is not likely to be beset with the kinds of worries that will detract from Chassidus. Now, the concept of bitochen is one of the most difficult things to achieve. Because if a person had true bitochen and sincerely believed that that which was predetermined for him, that's what he's going to get, then the time that he would put into Torah and Avodas Hashem, and the time that he puts in to his work and business affair, would change places. As we put in, the average person puts in a relatively smaller time into Torah and Tefillah, and the lion's share of the time goes into one doing one's job and doing one's business. And if we had a sincere emunah and a bitachon, then things would be reversed. Now, why would there be a need then to work at all if we had a true bitachon? It says, the fact is, he says that a person would not have to do anything because what a person has coming is predetermined, except for the fact, if not, that we are all subject to the penalty of Adam Arishan, who was told that he has to earn his bread by the sweat of his brow. And so we have no option. That's what we have to do. Asher al kein, and it's because of this penalty that was imposed upon us, chayiv Adam v'hishtadel eze hishtadlis, a person must do something to earn his living. Shikin kozram al chayin, this is the divine decree. V'hareza kemas shepereya kol minanush, it's like a fine or a tax that was imposed on humanity, asher ein limolet memena, from which there is no escape. Okay, no more. That's why the Chachamim said, Yochal afilu yeshiv aboto. One might think that a person can sit idle sit by idly and simply wait for his parnasa to come to him. Talmud Lama, so the Torah says, B'chol mishlach yodcha asher ta'aseh, Hashem will bless you in everything that you do, meaning that you make the effort and Hashem will bless it. However, achloi sheyishtad l'su amoyo, is to realize that it is not his effort that is bringing it about, that brings about the results. Ej ela shehishtadlus muchach, that the it is a necessity that he do so, because this is the fine that was imposed upon us. That we don't have the luxury of that other mother Shimon Gan Eden would have had had he not sinned. The Sforum point out that inasmuch as the fact that we have to work for a living is a fine and a penalty and essentially a result of the curse that Adam HaRishon received, why should anybody be so foolish as to wish to increase his own fine and his own penalty and to increase the intensity of the curse? One would seek to get along with a minimum of a fine and a minimum of penalty. And a person who has a high level of bitachon would do exactly that. Now, the fact that we are required to do something, that something could be like Reb Zundel of Salant. Reb Zundel of Salant said, I buy a lottery ticket. That's enough. He said, we are not in this stage where we can receive the moon dropping down miraculously to us from heaven. So we're not worthy of a clear ness, of a clear miracle. Therefore, we must do something so that it should appear that we are getting our support naturally. Okay? So whatever you do, as long as you provide some method of that the support comes naturally, that should be enough. But it's a very difficult thing to attain, because most people don't do that. Most people spend a great deal of time in earning their living. And the problem is that, incidentally, there's an excellent section in Rav Dessler's work on the Tochen Vehishtavos, on where do you draw the line as to how much trust should a person have, how much should it depend on trust, and how much should one do for oneself. He says that the reason that we are supposed to work for a living is, as Ramchal says in his other work, that the entire world is one series of tests, one test after another. And working for a living is a test as to whether we will believe that we earn this by our own efforts or realizing that Hashem is giving it to us. And it's easy to be deluded. It is so easy to be deluded. And there are countless stories about this. You know, the Vadichevel, Rabbi Yitzchak Vadichevel, once saw a person running in the marketplace. And he said, where are you running? He says, what do you mean, where running? I'm running after my parnosa. He says, so who tells you that it's in front of you and you're running toward it? Maybe it's behind you, you're running away from it. Mm-hmm. You know, one does effort and one never knows whether one is running toward or one is running from. Except that the person at the time is convinced that what he's doing is right. Another time, the Vadichva stopped a person who was hurrying in the marketplace. And he says, what are you doing? He says, look, I don't have time to talk to you now. He says, but just tell me. What are you doing? He says, I'm telling you, I don't have time to discuss with you now. He says, tell me, just what are you rushing around for? He says, what I'm doing, he says, can't you see I'm trying to make a living? He says, no, that's what Hashem is doing, right? I'm asking you, what are you doing, right? Your parnosa, he says, you're not going to make. Your parnosa, Hashem is going to give you, right? He says, I want to know what you're doing. It's unfortunate that the concept that we have is that what we do is going to determine what we earn. And the problem there is that here the title tells us clearly, do not say, do not say, it's my effort and my work that is done. And it's almost a concept of kfira, almost a concept of denial, to believe that one gets what one does, and that it's according to the effort that one makes. Yet it seems that if a person puts in time, that he, the more time he puts in, or the more innovative ideas, business ideas one has, the more one has panasa. Reminds me a little bit of the story of the two pranksters who went to Yellowstone Park, and they went and they picked up a steering wheel with a shaft. And they placed themselves not far from Old Faithful on a little hill, stuck the steering wheel, the shaft, in the ground. After a while, a guide came with a group of tourists, and he starts explaining to them the phenomenon, the miraculous phenomenon of Old Faithful, that every 63 minutes, precisely, it erupts, and that this hasn't failed since mankind is aware of it, and the precise mechanism that nature has. And he looks at his clock and he says, well, right now we're just about 45 seconds away from the next eruption. He says it never fails. Anyway, these two guys are standing there, and as it gets close to the moment of eruption, and the guide is saying, now you're going to see one of the wonders of nature, this one fellow says to the other, all right, Frank, let her go. Right? And the other guy gives the wheel a vicious turn, right? And the geyser erupts. Now, anybody looking at that who wasn't aware that this is a prank conceivably could think, oh, yeah, of course, they're standing there and turning the pipe on. Right? Now, the fact is that this is just a superficial delusion, and it's not turning the wheel that does it. Now, that's where we are with our working for Panosa. We have this idea that what we do determines it. And there's so many instances of, if one could only see. And again, our eyes are blinded to it, but if we really look, we can see that what Hashem wants us to have, we have. And if Hashem doesn't want you to have anything, then you'll feel, oh, this is great, I just won the lottery, and then you find that your car breaks down the next day, right? And the whole thing goes to the car mechanic. So, you know, there's no use in trying to outsmart that shit.
Is there a reason for poor people, existence for so many poor people?
Well, that's what the Gemara says. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, well, why are there so many poor? And Rabbi Akiva said, this is the design of Hashem, that he wants those who have to have the responsibility and have the mitzvah of taking care of the poor. Why the design, Hashem's design is this way, no one knows. But there are the various concepts that the Sforim talk about. Really, if you read the Chovas Halvavos, the duties of the heart, he has a long chapter on the concept of bitochen and trust. The Sforno says an interesting concept. He says, Zocher Hashem HaShabbos L'Kadshoi. Remember to keep Shabbos holy. Sheish Yomim Tavod, work 6 days and keep Shabbos. So he says that by Shabbos there's a mitzvah of Vachulu. Vachulu means it's complete. Soon as Shabbos enters, you forget about the entire week. Everything is done, he says. So he says, during the week, Sheish Yomim Tavod, work during the week, to enable to use Zohar Yom Shabbos to catch her. So when Shabbos comes, you'll be able to feel that the week is finished. Right? He says, Zohar Yom Shabbos to catch her. You should remember Shabbos when you're working all week. Don't build your week in such a fashion, don't run your life in such a fashion that when Shabbos comes, you're still going to be stuck with your head in the work week. Right? Plan your life so that when it comes Friday afternoon, you're able to cut it off and not carry your worries into Shabbos. So it's a question of an attitude, and it's an attitude that is a very difficult one to develop. And yet, it's like we said yesterday, as far as how sensitive is our perception and how keen are our senses. They are as sensitive and as acute as we allow them to be. And if a person would truly realize that his panosa comes from Hashem, then we would spend more time in Torah and mitzvahs and less time in pursuing economic gain. One of the problems is that if Hashem, yes, Hashem promised us panosa, but you know, it's like when Kennedy was running for election, he quipped that his father, who was exceedingly wealthy, said to him, "Look, I'll buy you an election, but I'm not going to give you a landslide." Yeah, Hashem will give us panosa, right? But what are our concepts of panosa? Right? If our concepts of panosa is to have excesses and luxuries that are not necessities, that never was in the bargain. Right? Hashem says, "I'll give you a look. Your job is to do avodas Hashem. Right? That's what you want to do, and you need sustenance for that. You know, for yourself and for your mishpah. Good, I'll give you the sustenance for yourself and for your mishpah. Doesn't mean I have to give you the latest designs, the latest designer clothes. Right? Doesn't mean I have to give you jewelry and whatever. Right? That's not necessary. But as far as necessities are concerned, you do your thing, Hashem says, and I'll give you the necessities." So the question is, are we ready for that? Are we ready to accept the necessities? Or do we have the idea, no, the necessities are nowhere near enough, so therefore I have to do more and get more than the necessities? And the Yitzhahara provides a way for us to delude ourselves that this is what we need. And the I remember who says that. The Gemara says, "Kal haroitza litas yava v'yita." Anyone who wishes to err, can. There's room in the world to develop false concepts. He says, "Gets kal haroitza litas." You have to have a will to err. Right? If you don't have a will to err, then you won't err. Okay? It's kal haroitza litas. If we're making mistakes in our concept and our thinking, it's because we want to do so. If our will was correct, where it's supposed to be, then we would not make mistakes in Emunah and in Betachon either. To be continued. Ramchal is completing now his admonition that preoccupation with trying to increase one's earnings can put one into a state of mind of tension and worry that will deter one from obtaining chassidus. And he said that an essence of chassidus is that one should have trust in Hashem, that Hashem will provide for all one's needs. And of course, one must do something because the Torah commands, "B'chol mishloch yadcha asher ta'aseh," that Hashem will bless you in all that you do, so you should make an effort. Ach loisha hishtadlus hu amoyel, not because the effort at earning is what is going to bring the results, ela shahishtadlus muchach, but because one is obligated to do something, and then Hashem will bless one's efforts. V'kivim shehishtadel, once a person has done something in order to earn one's livelihood, so he has fulfilled that obligation, then there is already, he has already planted a seed so that it can be a receptacle for the blessing of Hashem. And he does not have to devote his entire time with effort, consuming his time and exertion in order to make more money. This is why David HaMelech said in Tehillim, "Ki loy mimoitzo memarav," it's neither from east or west that one's wealth will come, "veloy mimid bahorim," and not from wilderness does uplifting come. It is only comes ki elakim shef, it is because an Hashem passes judgment on what a person should have, "zayashpil zayorim," Hashem can lift up one, and can lower another. Ushleima Melech Olav Hashalom, Ushleima Melech said, Al Tiga Lahashio, don't exert yourself and exhaust yourself in order to become rich. Mibinoscha Chado, avoid, abandon your efforts at trying to be clever and earn more than, and try to earn more than was destined for you. El Aderech Amiti, the true way, who Adakim Shel Chassidim Rishonim, this is the way that the early pious Chassidim behaved. Oisim Terosan Iko, they made Torah their principal preoccupation. Umalachton Tfeira, and yes, while they did work, it was a minor portion of their day. Bezev is Eniskay and Biyodom, and as a result of that, they had their Torah and they had their livelihood. It's not a question of priorities then as to what one considers important. So I remember by who it was that he came to one of the Rebbeim and he complained that his father, he inherited his business from his father, and the business was thriving for when his father ran it, and now he seems to be doing the same thing. He doesn't know why things have changed so drastically. He can sit for hours without a customer coming in. So the Rebbe asked, so what do you do during that idle time when no customers are there? He said, nothing. Sometimes I just sit idly by. Sometimes I read a newspaper. He says, so? He says, so don't you understand what's happening? He says, your father wasn't like that. Your father, whenever there was a free moment, he would say Tillim. Right? He would pick up a Mishnayos and learn a few Mishnahs. He would pick up a Sefer and look into a Musa or whatever. He says the Sultan didn't like that. Right? So what he did was he used his extraordinary powers to drive customers into the store in order to disrupt your father from saying Tillim and from learning Mishnayos. That was against him. Yeah. It irritated him to see that your father was doing that. He says, so your father had a lot of customers. He says, you sit by idly by, you waste your time, right? He says, the Sultan enjoys it. Why should he send you customers? In fact, he says, he uses his powers to deter customers from going in. He says, you're doing as long as you're doing what he wants, he's not going to bother you. So, the question is, what stimulates a person's income, what increases a person's income? Sometimes the last thing that we know that actually help a person earn. And he says, "Kivin she'odam osadim tzas malacha." Once a person has done a legitimate amount of work, even though it may have been quantitatively small, misham v'hala, once he has done something, eilu elu livtayach b'koinei, he should only have trust in Hashem, the loyli tzar al shim davar alami, and not to worry on any kind of mundane concern. Then his mind will be available and open, the liboy mucha lachasidus, and his heart prepared to lachasidus amiti, for the true piety, the true saintliness, and for the pure service of Hashem. Now Ramchal goes into Perek Chafes, chapter 22, Divya Midas Ha'anova, to explain something about the trait of humility. Hinikra Dibana Lamaila Mignus Hagava. We've already spent some time in talking about how repulsive it is to be a Balgaiva, how vanity and arrogance and thinking oneself better than everyone else is shameful and a undesirable trait. Umiklolo, from having mentioned that, nishma, that's self-evident, shvachanova, how praiseworthy humility is. However, I'd like to even talk a little further on the principle understanding of anova, that is ba'ahagadva me'ala. Now we'll do the reverse. We'll talk a little bit about what humility is, and then we'll be able to understand even more how unworthy it is to be a Balgaiva. And again, it's important to remember that the Gaiva is not the same as self-esteem. That Gaiva means I am better than everyone else. I deserve acclaim, I deserve appreciation because of what I did. I've got it coming. That is Gaiva, and that's disgusting. Self-esteem is an awareness of I have been given by Hashem a great deal of potential, and I can accomplish a great deal. I do have the abilities. Rather than leading to Gaiva, self-esteem can lead to humility, as one understands, well, if I've been given all of these enormous capacities, what have I done with them? And the awareness that one has not done even a small fraction of what one can do leads one to the true anova, to true humility, and stimulates one to further action. Whereas gaiva or vanity, well, look what I've done already. One can sit back on his laurels and not do anything constructive. So gaiva and self-esteem, rather than being incompatible, I'm sorry, rather than being identical, are actually contradictory. A person with good self-esteem is not a Balgaiva. Furthermore, there's every reason to believe that gaiva is nothing but a desperate defense against a person's feeling of unworthiness and inadequacy. And that a person who does have self-esteem does not go around strutting like a peacock, does not need to covet from others, does not need to constantly be reminded how great he is, and in this sense, gaiva is nothing but a superficial facade and a desperate attempt of a person to get a feeling of self-worth because the person feels so unworthy. Hine klal ha'anova, the principle of anova, the essence of anova, who hayos ha'odam bilti machshiv atzmai mishum tam sheyeh, a person should not attach undue importance to himself for any reason. V'zahefach ha'gaiva mamish, and that is the opposite of gaiva. Now, I think he's defining it very clearly here, that it is not a question of a humility of feeling I am no good and I can't do anything, a kind of nothingness which is destructive. That is not anova. Gaiva is, he says, is the feeling of I am better than, and attaching undue importance to oneself. The consequences that will derive from humility, will be the reverse of the results of vanity. If we look carefully at that, that humility is dependent both on thought and action. First, to begin with, a person must have a concept of humility and think himself humble. And this cannot be a put on. This is why somebody said, if humility is so important, why isn't it a mitzvah? Well, says, how could it be a mitzvah? Be humble? And a person will say, okay, I'm not going to do, I'm not going to fulfill the mitzvah of being humble. There's no way to have a mitzvah of being humble. Humble is an understanding. I have not really done anything that I have reason to boast. And to say, look how humble I am, is not humility. So first, a person has to be a true anov and think himself to be someone who has not yet done enough, and therefore not consider oneself better than anyone else. V'achakach yisnaig b'darchein ovim. And then he can do the kinds of things that will be the natural results natural derivatives of humility. Kimlayon of the Daitai. If a person does not feel humble, the Yiltsali is out of the Maisa, and all he's going to do is act as though he were humble. Lo yelamin anovim hamidumim hahoim. He's going to be a phony onov. He's going to put on an air of humility, which is nothing but real gaiva. Shezachanu lamanu. We talked about this. Shehem mikal hatzvuim asherein ba'olam rabem. These are the people who are deceitful. And there's nothing really worse in the world, nothing more evil in the world than a person who is a Baal Gaiva, and he acts, look how humble I am. This is the person who will sit in the rear row, waiting to be called up to sit at the head table, and seething with fury if this isn't done. So if a person sits in the back row because, like, that's all right. Okay, to sit in the back row. And it doesn't bother him. But if he's sitting in the back row because he expects everybody to see, look how humble I am, and to protest as to why is he sitting there, and insist on calling him up in the front, right, so that the entire assembly should see how he is humble and is being forced into the position of distinction, so that everybody should see he's how humble he is. That is a put-on humility. Now, people may not be able to distinguish that. And the only one who really knows what goes on in a person's heart and mind is Hashem. So a person has to realize that you may be able to fool some of the people. Maybe even able to fool all the people some of the time, and it's even possible that Lincoln was wrong. Maybe you can fool all of the people all of the time, right? But you can't fool Hashem. And one of the Rebbes once told somebody, he says, look, what are you trying to do? He says, you're not going to fool Hashem. Right? He says, you want to fool the rest of the world? He says, you may get away with it. He says, but you're really not going to succeed at fooling everybody always. So sooner or later it's going to come out. He says, the only one who you can really consistently deceive is yourself. Right? He says, so what do you get out of it if you deceive an old fool? But when we go to some of the lifestyles of our great tzaddikim, and we see how they lived their lives and the humility that they had, and it was not a put on, because this was so obvious, so genuine, it was a true part of their personality. I mean, people today who are still around who remember the Chofetz Chaim, or those who told us about the personality of the Chofetz Chaim. That with all his greatness, I mean, remember I told you the story about the Chofetz Chaim, whose learning was just unfathomable. And yet the Chofetz Chaim in his time did not have a reputation similar to Reb Chaim Brisker. I mean, it was accepted that Reb Chaim Brisker was the outstanding Gadol B'Torah of his generation. And there were others in that same category who were thought of as enormous Gaonim. And the Chofetz Chaim, in spite of the fact that he had written the Mishneh Berurah, and one just looks at the knowledge that went into the Mishneh Berurah, and you see his encyclopedic knowledge. In spite of that, the Chofetz Chaim was not looked upon in the same league as, for example, Reb Chaim Brisker. He was considered to be the greatest tzaddik. Right? So they said that was because the Chofetz Chaim, being aware of his encyclopedic knowledge, and obviously he knew how much he knew, otherwise he never would have written the Mishneh Berurah. Okay? If you don't think you know, then you don't write a sefer, authoritative sefer halacha. So he knew that he knew, and he was aware of his enormous scholarship. So he was misfollowed to Hashem, and he prayed that he let this not be discovered, that nobody consider him to be the great God. And his prayers were answered, and they did not put him in the same league as the other Goyim of the generation. Well, then why did people consider him to be such a great tzaddik? Why didn't he pray that he not be known as a tzaddik? He said it never entered his mind. It just never entered his mind that people would consider him to be a tzaddik. I mean, his knowledge he couldn't deny. That was a fact, right? So he prayed that it should not be discovered. Right? But that it shouldn't be discovered that he's a tzaddik, he said he never thought of himself to be a tzaddik. Right? And that's characteristic of the Chofetz Chaim. You know, that's how all the stories tell about the Chofetz Chaim. True, so you know this. Well, they don't tell the stories like that about anybody else. Right? And it's the stories that they tell about a person that tell you what his character was like. Whether each story is true or not is almost irrelevant. And this is true of all of these times. They tell a story of, which is very typical, the Bakiva Eger and the Nesivis, Rabbi Yankiv Lissa, were once traveling together in a coach, and when they came to, apparently there were other people traveling along with them, when they came to into the city and people were expecting them, there was a guard of honor that came out to greet them, and a whole throng of people came to welcome them. Well, the Vekivega understood these people are coming out to give cover to Rabbi Yankiv Lissa, to the Nesivis, right? And he wanted to join them. Okay? So he got out from one side of the coach and joined the throng to greet the Nesivis. And the Nesivis, on the other hand, felt that people are coming to greet the Kivega. So he got out of his side and he joined the throng, and when the coach came in, right, and people were looking for the Kivega, the Nesivis, and the coach, and neither of them were there. Because each person thought that the other one was the one that received. I mean, it didn't dawn upon them that they were the recipients of the honor. The interesting story of the Tzemach Tzedek, who was once on a trip, and he took the Maharash along. The Maharash at that time was a youngster, and wherever the Tzemach Tzedek had gone, he was received with great deal of covet, and the Maharash wrote a letter back saying how proud he was and how thrilled he was that people gave his father such dignified covet. When the Tzemach Tzedek came back and he found the letter, he called the Maharash in and he says, "My blood was spilling like water and you enjoyed it." Meaning that the covet that he received was terribly irritating to him. And they gave a mussel about a king who once wanted to see what was going on in all of the various parts of his country. And he wanted to do so without anybody knowing he was the king, so that they would continue to live normally, not attract attention. So he disguised himself as an ordinary foot soldier. And he asked one of his officers to accompany him. Now, the officer knew, of course, that the king, he was walking with the king. But everybody else thought that he was the officer and this other was a foot soldier. And wherever he came and people saw the officer, they got up and saluted him. They didn't pay any attention to the foot soldier, right? But they gave the due honor to the officer. And the officer just was tormented by this. Right? They are giving me cover. They don't see who's with me. They don't know who's with me. He says, a person who recognizes that he's constantly in the presence of Hashem, right? He says, if he's given cover, he says, that just eats away at him. Right? How are you giving cover to a human being? So it's a question of Shavisi Hashem Lenei Disom. It's a question of knowing that one is in the presence of Hashem. And this is why the Gemara says that that a person who is vain and arrogant and thinks himself better than others is essentially an idolater, is essentially a kofel, right? Because if he knew he was in the presence of Hashem, then he could never feel himself to have that importance. It would be just a total self-effacement. When we talk about the realization, the awareness that one, the awareness of humility, he is born in ha'odam v'yisamitz ha'esalei, a person should think and should reflect on the truth asher ein atila v'kavod ruyim loy, that he is not truly deserving of praise and honor. Kol shkein ahisnas al bremina, and certainly that he should not think he is superior to anyone else. V'zeh, and the reason for this is mipnei mashechosam ben avahachach v'gam mipnei mashekfar yesh biyodoy, that a person should realize his own limitations, the kind of things that he has done, and as a result of which he should come to the awareness, I don't have any claim to this. What am I? I am nothing except what Hashem has given me. Right? So, you know, if I were to have, if a person were to have nothing of his own, right? But in order to impress people, he went and he borrowed expensive things from his neighbors. Right? And now somebody coming to his home would look at, well, look how wealthy this person is. Right? I mean, his feeling should be, hey, come on, yeah, none of this is mine. I have no reason to feel better than anyone, I'm superior to anyone else because of what I have. None of this is mine, it's all given to me. So a person with a true realization and awareness that I by myself have nothing. Whatever I am is that which Hashem has given to me. Yes. So with what right does a person then feel superior to others?
Because he has such good neighbors.
Because he has such good neighbors. Mibnei ma shechosam mimenu, as far as a person's limitations, posha to its obvious, ki yev shalada beiz madrigashi min ashlemus, no matter how perfect a person is, it's simply impossible that he still has many deficiencies. Whether it's his own nature that is still lacking, or from his environment, his family, things that have happened to him, or as a result of his own actions that have not been adequate. There is no person in the land that has done all good and has not committed any faults. There's enough defects in every person that should not give him the capacity to think that he is superior to anyone else. No matter how many good qualities and talents he has, he should be overshadowed by his awareness of how much he is still lacking. And again, the awareness of how much a person, of how gifted a person is, should not interfere at all with anivus. And the prime example of this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu clearly was aware of his talents, of his gifts, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble of any person that had ever existed, right? Or that will ever exist. Mikol Adam HaShabbeinu means for all generations. And yet it's clear that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say, Imdu v'eshmo me'etzav Hashem lachem, just wait, I will go and talk with Hashem, I'll hear what he says. And that he had the awareness that he could freely speak to Hashem anytime that he wanted to. Well, someone with that kind of access to Hashem does not think of himself as being superior to anyone else. Well, clearly that did not interfere with Moshe's humility. So awareness of one's capacity should not deter in the least from a true humility. And we continue. Ramchal is continuing now a discussion of anova or humility. And this is something which in all the Sforim we find an enormous emphasis on. And as he has said before, one of the ways to get a proper character trait is to learn from the lives of the great tzaddikim and the great b'nei Torah. And if one just goes through some of their biographies, one sees that they were not put on with their humility, that their greatness coincided fully with their humility. Tell of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who was once given a great deal of COVID, and he broke down and wept. And he asked him what he was crying about. He says, "Look, I can't deny if people say that I am, in this generation, the outstanding scholar, etc., etc." He says, "Look, I'll have to accept it." He says, "What I'm crying about is that the generation is so degenerate and that we've fallen so low that I am an outstanding scholar." Right. Now, Rabbi Akiva Eiger would have been an outstanding scholar in the time in the time of the Rishonim. He was a phenomenon far above his generation. And yet, his wealth of knowledge did not in any way give him an attitude of superiority. And it was not a facade, it was not a put-on when he cried that he is the leader of the generation. He felt that this is an indication of how poor the generation is, that he can be its outstanding scholar. They say that Rabbi Akiva Eiger used to refuse to read the first two lines of letters written to him that had any titles in its salutations about how great he was. It just irritated him to read his own praises. And so he just used to skip that. Hine. One of the greatest dangers is that a person's wisdom and a person's knowledge and a person's academic excellence has the greatest danger of causing a person to feel vain and to adopt an attitude of superiority. Why is that? Because that seems to be a salutary trait that the person deserves credit for. And this is in the most honorable part of his personality, that he has developed his mind to the utmost. If a person happens to have a beautiful voice and sings beautifully, he can understand, look, this is a blessing. If I can take high C, I was given this. If a person has fantastic artistic skills that others don't have, he can understand that this is an innate kind of thing. This is an inborn kind of thing. But if a person excels academically, he is more likely to say, look what I've done with my mind, rather than to recognize this as an innate skill that he has. So for other skills, he says, the danger is not quite as great that a person will take personal credit for it as for a person's knowledge, because here the person is likely to see, look what I did, look how bright I am. V'hine ein loch chochem shalayita v'shalayisoch lulam divchaverob. And yet, who is a wise person who never makes a mistake and who doesn't need to learn from others? Everybody, no matter how wise he is, he needs to learn from others. And sometimes he even needs to learn from his students. Why should a person feel superior because of his wisdom? If a person has a straight mind and really appreciates things in reality for what they are, even if he turns out to be an outstanding scholar, the greatest, the MS, Kishiyastakovi is boinin, if he would take the time to think it through, yira he would see Shein Mokum Lagaiva Visnasus, that even so, he doesn't have any grounds to feel vain about his extensive knowledge. Kihine Mishu Baal Sechel Shiyade, Yosem Acherim, a person who has a great mind and can achieve in knowledge and wisdom more than others, should realize in simply exercising his natural talents.
Is this the ability we gain in the Garden of Eden from eating the forbidden fruit? This type of raising one?
Whether the person from the from eating the forbidden
natural
fruit.
Instinct to.
So the natural instinct of wisdom was there.
Right.
We didn't gain it. The question is, did we lower ourselves? Is that one of the distortions? That may be.
Was that like the tree of knowledge? The tree of knowledge between good and evil. I mean, it wasn't the idea just our intellect was. Adam had an intellect. I mean.
Yeah, very difficult. Yeah. The question is though, was one of the consequences of the that the Mauritian was one of the consequences that he now began to take credit for his own intellect rather than realizing.
Yeah. So as opposed to having the capability of intellect.
The capability of intellect was created before that. So he says, so if a person has a great mind, he should realize that's his nature. All he's doing is exercising his natural propensities. Like a bird that flies because it was constructed to fly. Right? And so a bird is going to say, look how brilliant I am. I know how to fly and people don't. I mean, if a bird had that intellect, would it be justified in thinking so? If you had an ox that has enormous strength and can pull a heavy plow, right? Would he be justified in saying, if he could think about it, look how powerful I am. I can pull what others can. Again, if he's shehukehu, that's his nature. Kain mi shehu chocham. Similarly, a person who is a scholar, a wise person, learned. Hu lefi shetiva mevielozat. That's a natural kind of instinct that he was given by Hashem to be able to learn and to understand. Had anybody and any other person who is not as bright as him been given the intellect, the intellectual capacity that he has, then perhaps the other person would have been as wise as he is, and maybe even wiser. Then there's no reason for superiority. And they say that this was my Moshe Rabbeinu, who in spite of knowing his enormous powers and enormous capacities, was the most humble person on earth, because Moshe Rabbeinu felt, I was given this. Had anybody else been given this, they probably would have done more with it than I did. So he felt that all of this was a given, and he has no right to take credit for it.
Actually, if a person is born with these specific gifts, so to speak, puts in the time and the effort to train his voice, which the nucleus had to be able to start with, or to develop his intellect through all this studying to become whatever, or to weight train or whatever to develop his physique. I mean, there's got to be a certain amount of, I use the word pride for something better, in what he's done, the fact that he didn't just take his inheritance and enjoy his life sailing or doing whatever. I mean, the fact that he found a proper path and did something with where somebody else could have frittered it away or allowed it to wait.
What the Anav says is not somebody else would have frittered it away. Somebody else would have done more with it than I did.
Right. Right. But a sense of accomplishment, I mean, for the fact you put out the effort, I mean, none of this just comes by itself. It's got to be there, but it doesn't just come. I mean, I could take voice training from Ottawa.
One could go either way, though. One could say, here, I was given this, and look what I've done with it.
Right. Now, is that wrong or is that not wrong? Look what I was given, look what I've done with it. I mean, I could have enjoyed myself.
Right, that's one way to look at it, right? But the owner looks at it the other way. The owner looks at it, I'm derelict. Because the idea of I'm derelict means I can still do more.
That's the difference in the owner from a bull guy. He just made the difference. But says, look at the gift that God gave me, and now I have a responsibility.
To develop it. So there's always a greater demand of oneself, whereas the other individual that says, look, I didn't fritter it away, and look what I've done, is much more likely to rest back on his laurels and not achieve.
You're expecting to be a Bulgarian. I heard him talk like this. It was amazing to hear a guy.
So he says the same thing that every other living thing exercises its own talents. Elim yesh b'chochma rabba, if a person has a great deal of wisdom, he should realize what he should do with it. He's got a responsibility to help others participate in it and teach others. As Rabbi Yechon Zaka says, im lamadeto teira harbe, if you have learned a great deal of Torah, al tachzik tevel asmaha, do not feel superior about that, ki lekach netzalta, because that's why you were created. It's interesting that we generally translate ki lekach netzalta, meaning, look, this is your duty to do. Right? And others say that the perush in lekach netzalta, ki lekach netzalta, means this is how you were created. Right? So if you have a great knowledge of Torah, he says, don't feel that you have any credit coming for it. As though it would say, because that is how you were created. You were created with the capacity. That's why you got it. So, no thanks to yourself. Similarly, if a person is wealthy, he should rejoice that he was given that wealth, and he should use it wisely to help people who do not have money. In Gibahu, if he is strong, all of Lazar Lakosha Mahatulashukim, he should use his strength constructively to help others who are weaker. Holamaza Doime, what can we compare this to? Lemishol Seabais, the various servants that a person has in his home. Shekol Echad Memun al Dovamo, each one is appointed to do something. V'roi le'la'amed b'mishmalta, and a person should stand over his assignment, l'fi b'kudosai, according to what he was instructed to do, l'ha'shalim alechas habayis l'tzrocheo, to complete the work of the house and its needs, v'ein b'chal mokam l'gab l'fi emes, there's no reason for feeling superior. Now, this is a basic concept in Yiddishkeit, that if we realize that we are here for a purpose, that we were designed for a mission. And he said, look, you know, if everybody in the house is going to want to say, yeah, but I would like to be the chief of staff of the house, right, then nobody's going to have anything to eat, and the house is going to be dirty, and the lawn is not going to be taken care of, right, because everybody's chief of staff. Right? He said, look, the chief of staff has to realize he was given that assignment. And the assignment of the cook is as important as the assignment of chief of staff, and the assignment of the gardener is as important. And everybody has his particular role. And he says, if one realizes not what's in it for me, right, but what's in it for the master of the house, then one will realize my assignment is important. And in many ways, the cook's assignment may be more important than someone else. The idea of what's in it for me is the kind of thing that leads to these crazy ideas of absolute equality. But why don't I have the rights that others have? Because Hashem didn't want you to have the rights the others have. If Hashem would have wanted more angels, he would have created more angels. If Kahanim are that great and everybody is superior, being in Kahanim, Hashem would have created all Kahanim. Okay? Would have created all Levim. But Hashem wanted some to be Kahanim and wanted some to be Levim, the others to be Yisraelim. Now, is a Kohen better because he is a Kohen and I cannot take $5 for the opinion of Ben and the Kohen can? He can Duchen and I can. He can say the Duch is Kahanim and I can. No, that's his assignment. His assignment is his thing and my assignment is my thing. We're supposed to do what we're supposed to do. And the idea is that one is better than the second. That's a selfish idea of what's in it for me. Not what does Hashem want. Hashem wants everybody to do.
What if you're supposed to be a cook, but you're the chauffeur? How do you get to?
Oh, wait, I don't get that.
For whatever reason, you haven't gotten to what you're theoretically supposed to do, or but you want to be a cook, but you're a chauffeur.
Well, the question is the question is not what I want to be, but what's needed here. Okay. Now, if it's what I want to be, then we're going to run into some situations like that. And if the question is what is needed here. Okay. What is needed here is what I'm supposed to do. And if the master says, look, right now I need the place painted. So I don't like to be a painter. I like to drive the Rolls Royce. I care what you like to do. I'm telling you what's needed.
Right? So, but if you're supposed to be a cook, He says, okay, well, after you get finished painting, we'll see about you.
I don't know what means it's supposed to be. If we're taking orders from the boss, right? No. Then it's not what I'm supposed to be. It's what does the boss need? Okay? Now, where this applies is this distorted attitude that some women have taken with the idea of equality. Right? We have to have all the rights in ritual that men have. Right? Men don't have all the rights either. Kahanim have certain rights, and Levim have certain rights, and Yisraelim have certain rights. Right? And males have certain rights, and females have certain rights. And Hashem wanted women to have the role of not having an aliyah to the Torah, then women don't have an aliyah. That doesn't mean that men are better. And if you need 10 men for a minion, then you need 10 men for a minion, right? And not five men and five women. Is that in any way a reflection on that men are superior to women? No. Right? Now, if the attitude is, but I want, well, if you want, then go ahead and do what you want. Right? But if we're interested in what does Hashem want, then there's no reason for anybody to think themselves superior. So it's as wrong for men to think themselves superior for women to women as it is of women to think themselves that they're somehow inferior to men because they don't equal them in, they don't participate in the same religious rites. The question is, what does Hashem want out of this? V'hine zeh ho'iyun v'hizboinenus ha'roi l'chol ish asher sich le'yoshev v'loi misakesh. This is the type of analysis and reflection that should be engaged in by every person who is honest and not distorted, not stubborn. Ukishi is boz as life. A person has this idea clear for himself, Ogiko Onov Amiti, then he is truly humble. Shebeliba Bikil Bahu Onov. It's not a put on thing, but he is truly humble to his very core. The Huke Inyan David, Amal and Michal, this is why David, when he was dancing before Hashem, and when the procession, when they carried the ark into Yerushalayim, David HaMelech was dancing, and Michal Bashol felt that this was not dignified for a king. She came from a house of royalty where there was more pomp, and she felt that David HaMelech was humbling himself. And David HaMelech says, before Hashem, there is no such thing as a difference in status. I dance like anyone else. I'm not the king when it comes to appearing before Hashem. The Yisi Shafal Ba'inai says, I am humble when I stand before Hashem. I'm humble in my own eyes. The Amrazal, the Chachamim have said, Kama Gidelim Nemuchi Ruach, how great it is to be humble. Shebizman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayim, when the Beis HaMikdash was existing and there were sacrificial offerings, if a person brought a oila offering, then he had the reward for the oila offering. And if he brought a meal offering, he had that reward. If a person is truly humble, the Torah says that is equivalent to someone who has not brought one or another offering, but somebody who is truly humble is considered as though he had brought all the offerings. As the Pesuk says, Zivchei Elokim, the offerings before Hashem, Ruach Mishpora, is a humble spirit. Hareza Shevach Shalimuch Ruach, this is the praise of people who are humble. Sheim Anovim Belivim Umachsavcha. They are humble in their hearts and in their thoughts, and it is not an affect of humility. The Chen Amroid, the Chachamim have said, that Hashem said, Lo merubcha mikol amim, I did not choose Israel because they are the most numerous of nations. So the Chachamim say, the question merubcha does not only mean quantitatively many, but Lo merubcha means that you do not hold yourself great and superior. Amalam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to Israel, Bona ani choshek b'chem, the reason I love you, Shafilu kishani mashpia lechem gidula, because you are of the character that when I give you greatness, you don't let it go to your heads, and you remain humble. I gave greatness to Avram Avinu. Omar, what was his response? I am nothing but dust and ashes. I gave greatness to Moshe Aaron. What was their response? Omru, they said, what am I? What are we? Nasati gedula leDavid. I gave greatness to David. Omar, what was his response? Vanochi telas v'la'ish. I am but a worm and not even a man. So you see, that's the greatness that Hashem says, I've given you greatness, and you don't let this greatness go to your head, and you continue to feel humble. We see here that the Gemara lists the three prime examples of humility that were manifested by Avraham Avinu and by Moshe Rabbeinu and by David. That Avraham Avinu said, I am nothing but dust and ashes, off of Eifa, and Moshe Rabbeinu said, V'nachnu ma, we are what? What are we then? And David HaMelech said, Anechi telas, I'm not a worm. Now, as he said before, this is an awareness, a person's true awareness of himself. Now, that does not mean that a person does not realize his own self-worth, because as we said before, he realizes his self-worth, but he realizes that that doesn't make him superior, that this is a gift from Hashem. And so, this is anivus and humility, which is the perception of truth that it was given by Hashem. And even about Hashem it says, wherever we find in the Torah an expression of the greatness of Hashem, we find that Hashem too relates in a fashion to teach humility. And the three examples of humility are Avram, Eifa, Moshe when he said Ma, and David when he said Telas, right? Ashes, or what? Or I'm but a worm. Eifa, Ma, and Telas are embers. So truth symbolizes the three categories, the three manifestations of the three prime examples of anivus, right? Eifa, Ma, and Telas. Right? This is a result, their greatness, because a just and integral heart does not allow itself to be seduced by a person's own achievements. Biyodai, in his knowledge, the MS, and in knowing the truth, that just because he has achieved excellence, this does not affect him and turn his head and does not bring him out of his humility. To the contrary, a person always realizes his own defects, that in dereliction, that with everything that I've been given, I have not yet done enough. A person realizes that with even what he has achieved, he has not yet arrived at the ultimate goal. And we've seen this where the story told about the Chayz of Lublin, that when he returned from Tashlich, the Rapsitzel was going down to Tashlich, and Chayzah says to his Talmud to the Rapsitzel, where are you going? Right. So he says, I'm going to the river to pick up the Averis that you threw away. Right. Meaning that the Chayzah discarded things that he thought were improper for him, which for other people would be great mitzvahs. Right. But for him, he felt that this was not good enough. Right. So he says, a true Anav realizes, no matter what he's done, I mean, you're dealing in relationship to the infinite, the infinite greatness of Hashem, the infinite greatness of Hashem, whatever we're doing can't possibly be anything. And if a person has that proper perception, then he will not be misled by becoming vain over his own achievements. And on the other hand, a person who lacks that perspective can feel superior about anything. They say that when Reb Chaim Volozhin tried to institute conditions in the yeshiva that were would be more pleasant for students, better eating conditions, or better sleeping quarters, whatever, somebody said to him, look, it's important that the Neteira should feel humble, and if you're going to give them, you know, better conditions, right, you're apt to interfere with their humility, and they're going to feel vain. So Reb Chaim Volozhin said that in the bathhouse there was a one of his attendants there who used to help people off with their boots. And so he was the boot remover. Okay? This is one time he came into the bathhouse and this guy was pulling his boots off and he was yanking the boots off, you know, very, very roughly. Right? And it hurt him. So he said, hey, please be careful. Now you're pulling too hard. And the guy says, don't tell me what to do. I'm the best boot remover in the area. He says, look, if a person is going to be a Balgaiva, right, if a person is going to be vain, right, then he can be a boot remover and think he's the finest. Right? So he says, whether a person is humble or not, right, is not going to depend on those circumstances. There's no danger, right, in giving B'nai Torah some better circumstances and putting them in danger of vanity. It's interesting that the Sifrei Musa speak of the dangers of vanity. That in any other, first of all, we're talking about vanity as being essentially a denial of the awareness, the greatness of Hashem, because a person who had a proper perspective could not be vain. And he says, think of it in this way. Any other Aveda, you must have something to do the Aveda with. You cannot possibly eat chazer unless you have chazer. You cannot possibly have a forbidden relationship unless you have the object of the forbidden relationship, right? Every other Aveda requires something. He says, vanity, he says you can be lying covered up in bed, covered up with your covers over your head, and think, I am the greatest. Right? He says, vanity is so dangerous, he says, you don't need anything to transgress it. To be continuous.